All right, before we begin, a reminder that this will be the last Hollinger and Duncan that will be available on the free airwaves exclusively. We are going over to Dunked On Prime, where there will now be 4 episodes per month during the season. And we'll have a couple still on this feed per month. But if you want to get all of them, it's over there. And John is starting next week, so we're having a one-time only John Hollinger pre-sale, the lowest price that we will ever offer for a yearly membership. Highly encourage you to take advantage of that in the next week before that first episode goes live on Dunked On Prime next week. That's when that deal is going to end. So please give it a shot. And John and I, in your feed, we explain more about why we're doing this, what kind of coverage you're going to get from us over there. We hope it's going to be an even better product than it has been here. But speaking of amazing products, I mean, last night, like I thought your tweet kind of summed it up of what it was like watching these two guys go at it.
The one that said it was like watching Bird vs. Magic in, back when I was in second grade. I mean, it was the only thing I could compare it to, really, where you had a matchup of the top guys in the draft that were this hyped and at this high a level. It was funny. After the game, I was talking to Sam Vecenie, our draft expert from The Athletic, and we were trying to go back and think if there's been another matchup of the top two guys quite like this. Christian Laettner versus Shaquille O'Neal was probably the best one we could come up with. But even that, I mean, Laettner ended up being the third pick. I think these guys are probably going to be the top two, and we're probably going to be talking about them for a long time. So we'll see if this all lives up to the hype. Obviously, fate intervenes in all kinds of ways when you're talking about 18-year-olds and what they're going to be like in their late 20s and whatnot. But that was just it felt like almost a magical night last night. I mean, the whole league was there watching. Everyone's still in preseason, so there wasn't like the distraction of other games or whatever. And it really could not have worked out more perfectly, I think, for the NBA.
Yeah, and congratulations to everyone with the G League Ignite and Sharif Abdul-Rahim for, and of course, Metropolitan 92 as well, for putting this together. And it really was just pretty crazy to see these guys. And, you know, I'd seen Wembanyama in the 2021 World Championship under 19 against Chet Holmgren and USA, and he was dominant there. I think he had 24 points in that game, but also got into foul trouble. The thing that stood out the most to me, I mean, the shooting is obviously ridiculous for his size. You know, we've never seen anything like that. I mean, I remember Yao at 7'6" was like making threes in his NBA workout, and that was a big deal. And he was an unbelievable shooter for a big man. But Wembanyama, you know, the way some of these shots he's hitting on the move, I mean, to make 7 threes was ridiculous. But the bigger thing that stood out to me is he's blocking shots in a way that I've basically never seen. I mean, he still doesn't know what the hell he's doing on defense. But when he's in position, you know, you see these guys like who are like 6'10 trying to get a hook shot over him, and he just sends it back in their face every time. And he's blocking jumpers. Like, you can't shoot. You have to have like 10 feet of separation on the guy to get a jumper off. Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I was really impressed with some of the contests he got on jump shooters, just sort of appearing from very far away, just because his length is that, you know, that impressive. Or even the steal he had on Scoot Henderson at the end when it was overturned by replay. They called a foul on the actual play. It sort of looked like a foul from where I was sitting. I had the same angle that the referee did. But you could see he got his hand on the ball first, and he reached out so far. My former colleague J.A. Adonde posted a great picture of it, just how far he reached out to get his hand on a ball that Henderson clearly thought the ball was completely safe. And I do think this guy is going to be able to be a pretty capable switch defender, just because he can give so much space and still get a contest on the shot. So pretty impressive that way. The shooting part is really interesting, because I was watching him warm up, and I mean, it just looks fluid and pure. And then you go through his stats, and he hasn't really shot the ball well before this year, his whole career, either on threes or from the free throw line. But he's still at a young enough age where a shooting jump like this is very possible. And, I mean, he just looks so fluid shooting it. He really reminded me of, like, It was like a cross between Kristaps Porzingis and Ralph Sampson is probably the best thing I could put it as. Just in terms of his size and his ability to do some stuff on the ball, like off the dribble. But then the deep shooting range and the thin frame. Very interesting to see how all this translates for him because, I mean, they're definitely, for both these guys, there's still areas where you can see they need to get better, where NBA defenses will be able to do some things and they'll have to figure out how to counter that. But just so much potential in both these guys. It's just crazy.
I think you're right. I got some thoughts on Scoot. We'll get to him in a second. I think for Wembanyama, of course, and you've pointed this out many, many times, once you get above 7'2 or so, you know, Rudy Gobert, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, there's really nobody else who hasn't had their career significantly impacted by injuries. Actually, Sean Bradley is probably the one other guy who didn't have that many injuries during his playing career. So you do wonder about that, obviously, and particularly with this mobility, he's not just going to be, you know, just posting up and shooting jump hooks. Like, he's going to be out there on the floor. And you saw guys, like, he got fouled twice shooting a three-pointer, which is
okay, so
insane.
I was terrified watching this the whole game. So here's the thing. He's huge, right? So people are trying to, like, to contest his shot. You have to be right absolutely on top of him. And the whole game plan against him is to crowd his airspace. And so I think he's going to draw a lot of three-shot fouls because of that. But also, every time he went up and elevated, I was just terrified that somebody would low bridge him and he'd turn his ankle and what's that with as long as his levers are, how is that going to be when that happens time after time? Like, that was the one thing watching him, just like, oh man, like he's is he going to keep getting undercut? Is this going to be a problem?
Yeah, I mean, but the skill level is really good. Now, I thought Ralph Sampson, to me, he was also 7'4" and it would do some of those crazy dunks along the baseline that Victor's capable of doing, where he just kind of reaches around from behind the backboard and dunks it. You'd see that on some of the other highlights with him. But Ralph also, he was kind of known for being a little bit soft. I think Victor is a way better shot blocker than Ralph Sampson was.
Don't appreciate you disparaging
at the time. But
Mikhail
Ralph, wouldn't really overpower guys. He wanted to play the four.
Yeah, it's true.
I think it's a different game today. I think Victor will play a lot of center. But, also the fact that Victor can shoot threes makes it possible he could play some four. He'd kind of be an Evan Mobley kind of guy at the start of games, potentially next to another center. But I do think, like, he's got to get stronger. And what he's going to be able to do against smaller players, to me, is going to really determine his fate and whether you can force the other team to put their center on him. And now that guy is going to be just completely dead as well. So, because it's off the dribble game. It's incredible for a guy his size. It's way better than, say, Porzingis as a driver. And so I think if he gets a little bit of space, he'll be able to attack. But can he really get into the post? We saw one play where he turned and faced and just shot over the guy. So, I mean, if he just becomes a Dirk Nowitzki level of shooter, then fine, he'll just do that. But I'm interested to see how that's all going to work.
Yeah, when I watched him, I thought F.A. Ajibide, the guy from Washington State who's on G League Elite this year, like, did a really good job of crowding him and getting into his space when he tried to post him up. And I think you're going to see NBA defenders continue to do that. And he doesn't have a lot of lower body strength right now. So that's going to continue to be a challenge for him. And it's going to be interesting because, like, he got so much off of pick and pop type actions, which I think are going to be NBA defenses are going to switch that. And then it's going to be on him to try to attack that switch. But if stronger defenders can get under him and keep him off balance and uncomfortable, it's going to be a little bit like when Porzingis posts up, right? So I think that's one of the challenges for Wembanyama is what is he doing for offense beyond a pick and pop? Our defense is going to be able to turn him into, you know, Miles Turner, basically.
Yeah, well, and so the two ways to get past that is, number one, he's just an amazing shooter. But number two, that I think he has a little bit more bend, more moves, just more fluidity than Porzingis to attack and get past guys. And I think he does a pretty good knack for drawing fouls as well. So, what's your feeling right now? Obviously, we'll amend this as we really get into the film before the draft. But is he, I mean, like Mike Schmitz has called him the best prospect he's ever evaluated. I mean, are you on that type of a level with him?
I'm not sure I'm quite at that level with him. I mean, obviously, I was really impressed from last night. The thing we haven't really talked about is he has some stuff to him off the dribble, like where he's picking it. You see him pick the ball, take the ball up the court, kind of signal for a screen to come, and then take his man one-on-one off the dribble. And, I mean, his stride length is so long that, like, there's no way somebody can stay with him and contest the shot if he just doesn't lose the dribble or get caught in a crowd. So I think there's some real opportunities for him that way, too. You know, I'm trying to think, you know, I think LeBron James as a prospect was obviously in his own level. I think Anthony Davis, you know, is Wembanyama quite on that level? I'm not sure I can get there yet. But I mean, that was really impressive. I'm really excited to see, I'm going to see him again tomorrow when they play again. So I'm really excited to see how that goes. And I want to watch him again shoot before the game, because you can see guys shoot, you know, instead of 10 shots, you can see him shoot 100 obviously before the game. But I was impressed with what I saw from his shooting yesterday pregame. So, you know, in terms of like generational type prospect, probably right now I'd probably go like a notch below the LeBron AD kind of level. But, you know, maybe where, who are some other ones, you know, Zion Williamson or John Wall or somebody like that?
Yeah, a couple of things there. I think on defense is where I think he could be something we've never seen before. And he's got pretty darn good mobility. He hasn't figured it out at all yet in pick and roll defense. He hasn't really figured out how to trust his size. He's jumping early still a few times when he just doesn't need to do that given his size. Yeah. Like, I wasn't wowed by his feel for the game watching him. I think his skill level, yes, but is the feel for the game, maybe not as much, but I think he'll be able to get there. He's certainly well above average for a typical center. Yeah. And then when you talk about the generational prospects, I mean, so I had talked about this on Spotify Live, I think, with Danny, of who those guys are. So you probably got, before this, Zion, AD, Greg Oden, at least as far as what their perception was at the time.
Yeah.
LeBron, Tim Duncan, Shaq, Patrick Ewing, Akeem. Again, this is at the time of the draft, not afterwards. So, you know, MJ wouldn't have been on there. And then you go back to Magic, probably before that, I would say. Or Ross Sampson would probably have been in that, too.
Yeah.
And when people seem to think that about guys, they're just like, oh, yeah, this is the guy we're tanking for, you know, 2 years out. Other than with Sampson and Oden getting felled by injuries. And maybe Oden, we talked about this, too, wasn't quite at that level in the end with the way the game was changing.
Yeah.
But and they usually seem to do pretty well when that seems is the consensus. And I would put him in that category. I mean, he's doing stuff we've never seen before. I think that's pretty fair to say. You want to talk about Scoot a little bit?
Yeah. The thing that was noticeable with him, even before the game even started, I mean, he was so amped up. Like, you could tell he came out there and was like, oh, I'm number two? You really think I'm number two? Like, okay. Okay, let's go.
And the answer is yes. I do think that. But nice job. You'd be number one in any other draft. I mean, I haven't seen the other guys too, but yeah. But I mean, just watching him, I thought, yeah, this is a guy who looks totally like the part of a possible number one overall pick.
Yeah. You know, I thought the shooting looked good, the athleticism, the burst. He profiles as more of a scorer, but I thought he made enough passes, and most of them were more one read passes rather than kind of elite level manipulating the defense type stuff. But I still for his age, like, I thought he was pretty good. And
yeah, I liked it more personally. I thought there was a stretch where he took over once the Bet 92 got back into contact. I think he even took like a 2-point lead. He took over in pick and roll going at Wembanyama, and he set up like three or four really good shots. Or I'm not sure who the roll man was that he had, but he had like a couple of really nice pocket passes where he drew Victor over him. He set up a corner three. I think it was Jenkins. Like, I thought, yeah, actually, I was very impressed for his age and athleticism of the polish he showed in pick and roll personally.
Yeah. And reading what was happening and that they had changed their coverage and that he was going to have to be more of a distributor. I thought that was very impressive. So yeah. I got like maybe like a prime Derrick Rose vibe kind of from him. Like I think his, you know, his deep ball probably still needs to get a little bit better, but that'll come with time.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he looked comfortable with it. Like, he hit one step back. He also shot a set shot when he was wide open. I think his handle is really, really good. His handle is right up there. I mean, it's not quite the creativity of someone like a Morant yet, but it's just, it's tight, it's fast, it's reactive when someone tries to jump out at him. I think in terms of like a point guard prospect, at least at this age, you know, he'd be just going into his freshman season. Like, I would say, you know, Kyrie is probably a more effortless scorer just with his jump shot. But as far as just a fully rounded point guard prospect, I think his defensive feet are really good. I thought that was another thing that I was impressed by. Like, he's up at the top of just kind of pure point guard size prospects, you know, of the last 20 years, I would say. I mean, Chris Paul, I think, is the guy that he makes the most sense to compare him to me. But I think actually his deep shooting has probably evolved beyond where Paul, and this is again Chris Paul going into his freshman year at Wake Forest, we're comparing him to.
Yeah, I mean, Scoot is much bigger and more athletic too. I mean, Chris Paul is just, you know, Chris Paul's IQ was just on a different level. But like, it's funny because Chris Paul was never thought of as like that guy, really. Like, you know, even in his draft year, people are like, well, is it Chris Paul or Jarrett Jack? Like, who's the best point guard in the ACC, you know? And obviously we got that question answered, but I think Scoot is starting from a much higher level even than Chris Paul was.
Yeah, I mean, he's taking off from the dotted line on these fast break dunks. Like, he's got a lot of athleticism. Any news that's happened over the last couple of weeks that you think we should get into before we talk a little bit about who we think some of the best teams at either end of the floor are going to be?
Yeah, well, I mean, that Oklahoma City-Houston trade just has the league, it just knocked sideways, right? I don't even know how to react.
Well, we haven't had the only extension we've had is Hero, right?
Yes.
Or the I should say the only rookie scale extension.
We had Dean Wade's extension too, I think.
And we Nance as well, and Steven Adams.
Yes.
As well. I mean, those I thought were pretty darn straightforward about what you would have expected. Does Hero fall in that category for you though?
So I guess I was a little surprised still, just because. So I'm not quite as high on Hero as some other people are. I know Heat fans are all angry with me because I made some snide comments about the Sixth Man Award. But I questioned it a little from that perspective. I understand like where the cap is going with these rookie extensions. It's hard to screw it up, man. Like you're just getting so much of a lift from how much the cap is projected to rise, especially in the out years when you get the third, fourth year of that contract, that even what looks like an overpay is probably going to end up being okay. I'm surprised he got, I'm actually a little surprised, like relative to RJ Barrett, like who would you pay more, Barrett or Hero?
Oh man, that's a tough call.
Because Barrett got just barely over $100 million, right?
107 guaranteed, 120 with incentives. It looks like Hero's incentives are pretty pie in the sky, you know, all NBA type of incentives. So you know, we're looking at basically $30 million a year instead of 107. I'm not sure exactly what Barrett's extensions are yet.
Yeah, Barrett's cabinet. Yeah, he averages like 26 and change, I think, over, you know, the average year on that contract. So I guess I'm a little surprised that Hero got more money than Barrett. And it also is interesting because he was Miami's big trade chip. And now it's going to be really hard to trade him because of the poison pill. And so that's going to take Miami out of some scenarios that maybe they would have been looking at otherwise.
Yeah, that's a good thought. And now it does make him easier to trade next offseason. So you do give him that. He's under contract as opposed to a restricted free agent. If it doesn't happen this season, it's going to happen next season where one big chip is going to happen. Like, they're not going to be, I don't think, $18 million into the tax, you know, unless they like maybe make the finals or win the championship or something. But between Hero, Duncan Robinson and Kyle Lowry, one of those three guys is going to not be on the team next year. It seems almost inevitable that that's going to be the case, because they're just be, I mean, once they fill out their roster, they'll be over $20 million into the tax and, you know, massive payment.
Oh,
unless the one thing that might happen is maybe the tax gradations get changed in the new CBA and they get bailed out there.
Yeah, even, I mean, they don't even have that many players signed, and they're this far into the tax. Like, they are really in a difficult spot, actually, if they can't do something with the Lowry or Robinson deals, and they don't have a bunch of draft picks lying around either. So, a little bit. I mean, Miami has wriggled itself out of pickles like this before that seemed intractable, but still, like, not a great situation for Miami right now.
Yeah, and I guess the next question just is Hero worth this? I mean, it's in the band. After the Simons contract, obviously, you knew he was going to get more than Simons, and Simons is $25 million a year. This is $30 for him. Would I have thought it'd be more in the 27, 28 range? Yeah, probably. It's also, oh, you paid $2 million a year extra. Well, that doesn't matter as much when it's the difference between 28 and 30 as opposed to the difference between, I don't know, 12 and 14 or something.
Yeah.
Back when the cap was a lot lower. So I don't know if this is a killer. A lot of it depends what he does this year, you know. And the question that I had about all four of these small guards who came up, Sexton, Simons, Poole is still out there, and Hero, is these guys aren't point guards, probably. Simons, Poole are probably a little bit closer there than Hero and Sexton. But if you're not a point guard and you're this undersized, can't really switch, can't really defend shooting guard, how valuable is that player? Like, can they get up to be a Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, Zach LaVine level of shooting guard, or like a Donovan Mitchell level of player? It seems like they're probably a rung below that. But then you're like, yeah, well, okay, what is the replacement level, right? What is the difference between Tyler Hero and what Lou Williams was, or Jordan Clarkson? And I mean, the difference obviously is these guys are younger. They've had some playoff moments.
To me, there's kind of a lot of
question worth asking. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're really banking on them continuing to improve. Now, Hero does have a little more positional size, like he rebounds and stuff, and so you're banking on him becoming competent enough on defense that he could be a starting two. Whereas some of these other guys are a little more in between size wise.
Yeah. So what do you think? Poole get done or not get done?
Well, I think the Heat just made the Warriors' life more complicated, right?
Yeah. That would make sense to me.
If you're Jordan Poole's agent, aren't you saying to the Warriors, well, I'm better than this guy, so you got to do better than this? And the Warriors, I'm sure, are looking at their luxury tax situation going, no, we might want to just play this one out before we commit here.
Yeah, I do think that Poole has the highest upside of any of the four guys that we talked about. And I think he has the best chance of being adequate on defense. I think ultimately, if I could get him for that Hero price, I ultimately would just go ahead and bite the bullet and do it. I think he's tradable at that number if you have to do it. So just get him under contract. I mean, who knows? Like, they don't have control over Andrew Wiggins and Draymond Green. They presumably, if they offer him enough, they'll come back. They like it there. But unrestricted free agency, you just never know. And so this is a good player that they can keep that's young. And I think you bite the bullet and do it. All right, if he wants $32 million a year, like, okay, maybe not, right? But I think, or do you include some more incentives in there? Maybe. I'm very curious to see how this data point is used by both sides. But it seems like you're really in probably a $3 million per year band at this point, as far as like what would realistically be offered and accepted. So you think a deal probably has to get done at that point.
You would think so, unless Poole is insisting on the max. I mean, that would be the only thing that would...
Well, yeah. Yeah, at that point, then there's not much downside.
Yeah, yeah. To not much downside to waiting, you mean, right?
If you're the Warriors, exactly. And obviously, Poole hasn't made much in his career either, I think. But he is a guy who really does not lack for confidence and has gotten better every year. So you could still see him rolling the dice. I would imagine, though, and I think you should, at that level, be able to craft a deal with maybe more reachable incentives where the Warriors would be like, okay, we are comfortable paying you $30 million a year, or even more than that, if you hit these, you know, particularly over the life of this contract too, right? It's not even about this year. He's going to be under contract for presumably 4 years after this one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that would be like a sneaky incentive would be like put in a championship incentive too, which would, sure. would not count for this year, but would for the years after when Steph, Draymond, and Clay are a little older.
All right, you want to talk about the best offenses and defenses in the NBA here? Because I did this exercise over the last couple of days. I've been doing the hour-long team outlooks, and I've got 22 of those in the books now.
Okay.
And I still really struggled. I don't have a great understanding. I wanted to kind of talk through it with you and see if I could get some more clarity on who some of the best offenses and some of the worst offenses and if we have time, defenses. Otherwise, we'll get to that next week. So any team that you're, and I usually like to do this in tiers. So is there any team where that you look at and you're just like, this team for sure is going to be a top tier offense, you know, a top five level of offense this year?
Okay. So I'd say there's two teams that I look at, Denver Nuggets and Brooklyn Nets.
So this is if healthy.
They're all if healthy. I mean, that's the one, because it's all contingent on these elite level offensive talents. If they miss games, like, forget it, right?
Well, they're all if healthy, but some teams are more healthy than others.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's very Orwellian. But yeah, I think, you know, Brooklyn, I picked their under. I think it was 49.5 just because of the implosion risk. And also, I'm a little bit worried to the implosion risk, the injury risk, and
I think they might just suck on defense.
Yeah, well, the first game would seem to indicate that. The first preseason game, which, as we know, is the arbiter of all that will happen over the next 82. Yeah, I mean, Brooklyn would have to be in my top tier, though. I mean, if you just look since they've been together the last 2 years, or, you know, Harden and whether Joe Harris available or not or whatever, with KD and Kyrie on the floor, they're like a 120. Like, yeah. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. So I think as long as those guys are healthy and playing, and even against the Celtics, where it seemed like they were getting shut down, they couldn't stop the Celtics, but they still actually had, I think, the best performance of any offense against the Celtics last year.
And they have so much shooting around those guys, too. I mean,
yeah.
When you have Curry and Harris and Mills and even, like, you know, O'Neal's like your fifth guy who's a good open shooter, like, there's just a lot of weapons there. Not really any front court weapons, but just so many perimeter weapons.
Yeah, the only downside I would say is they're going to start Simmons and Claxton together. But even then, I think they have enough shooting that and mid-range scoring in the half court that they're still going to be pretty good. And they're going to run a lot, too. Simmons will help them push the pace even more than they have in previous years. Harden kind of slowed them down a little bit, other than the hit-ahead passing. But I think being able to outlet the ball at Simmons, have him push, and then find KD and Kyrie as, or Joe Harris trailing the play, it's going to be pretty devastating. Yeah, I think Denver would have to be in there for me, too. I mean, just again, the numbers with Jokic on the floor. Now, are we going to get Mike Malone five-man bench units with no spacing? Yeah, you know, like, are we going to see, like, Bruce Brown just, you know, being as like a guy off the bench, like, not really playing that much with the starters? Even in their base lineups, they don't have amazing shooting on this team, right? I mean, Porter Jr., yes, but KCP is probably a little below average at this point. Gordon is very below average.
Yeah.
And again, you wonder about the health of Porter Jr. I thought he and Murray both looked pretty decent a couple of nights ago, which makes you feel good at least. But those guys are going to be on the every other game plan, the 30 minutes a game plan. We're not going to see Murray playing, I think, on the second unit next to, you know, staggered from Jokic as much just due to the minutes limitation. So I do think their bench might be bad still on offense, but whatever.
Highland, Braun, Brown, Green, Najee, you're worried about that unit?
Yeah, it's a lot of colors, but not a lot of made shots, unfortunately. So, yeah, I think, but whenever Jokic and Murray are on the floor together and Porter now can shift down into more of that elite play finishing role, yeah, I think that you got to talk about them as being up there for sure.
This was the number six offense last year, a tenth of a point out of fifth, with zero games from Murray or Porter. So, I mean, maybe, you know, Jokic maybe isn't going to play every game under quite the load that he did last year. But I think they can at least nudge themselves up to fifth or fourth, right?
Yeah, I would think so. And I also, it's worth noting, I think, that we kind of forget that most players in the league like missed three or four games due to COVID last year. And maybe those are games that they would have missed due to nagging injuries or whatever anyway. But we maybe can pencil guys in for a few more games than they had last year.
Yeah, that's a good point.
When we look at that. So, all right, I think those two are the ones I feel, I would say, the strongest about.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. The GM survey came out yesterday. They picked Golden State
as last
the
year's
best offense.
Yeah. Last year's number 17 offense. Now, the Warriors have a case to be better than that, obviously, based on what they showed in the playoffs once they had Klay back in the lineup. You know, you have Curry, Thompson, Poole. But, I mean, Golden State, to me, is still more of a defensive team than people realize, especially at the regular season level. But what's your take on them?
I think Steph Curry is going to have a better regular season this year statistically.
Yeah, he had his regular season last year was his worst one in like a decade.
Yeah, I mean, he just couldn't make shots. That was the biggest problem. Like, he was shooting below 40% from three. I think history has shown that even if he's going to take it a little easier or whatever, like, the ball's going to just go in for him more than it did a year ago. Having Klay the entire season, being able to play Klay, Poole, and Steph together, I think in the regular season will be very tenable. And I think those units will look really good. But yeah, after that, you do kind of wonder, like, they're, but I don't think many of their guys that they lost were just like so awesome on offense. Porter was really good the first half of the year, but then he really struggled the second half of the year, didn't play that much. And even on offense early on, I think they were top five for, you know, maybe the first month and a half of the year. And then when Steph started falling off, that wasn't the case anymore. You know, I still think they might be my pick for the number one playoff offense. Maybe it would be Brooklyn if they're fully healthy. But, you know, obviously Golden State will be way better on defense. So I think they could easily be number one. It just doesn't feel like they will be. I mean, they just haven't had those level of results in the regular season. And I do think they're going to be a lot better. Like, Poole's going to just get a lot more reps. Having just that one more shooter on the floor in Klay is going to really open things up. It's just a question of how seriously are they taking the regular season. But usually that applies more to defense than offense.
That's the other thing is that, I mean, I think it applies to the offense just from the extent of, like, how many games are they really going to play Steph? If you know what I mean? If he has a little thing that's bothering him, they'll just be like, okay, take a week, you know? Like, I don't think they care if they end up as the third seed.
Yeah, but they might be in a dogfight for the third seed. We'll see. And Wiggins, is he going to take a step forward? Like, I don't know if he's going to shoot it quite as well this year. He's not an incredibly efficient player either. And so he's another possible question mark whether he could take a step forward to be more of an efficient finisher. Yeah, maybe. I think Poole is going to be really good this year. So they're kind of more in this next group to me. Who else would you have as a possible candidate?
So I have two other teams that I feel pretty good about being in the top five offenses this year. One of them is last year's number two offense, the Atlanta Hawks.
I am selling the Atlanta Hawks as a top five offense.
Really? Season. Okay, here's my case. I think as long as you have Trae Young, right? Like, he's an offense unto himself. And then with the addition of Murray, the non-Trae minutes should be less awful than they've been in the past. So between those two things, I think they stay in the top five this year.
Yeah, I'm just not a Murray believer. And I also think that Herter and Gallo are both really good three-point shooters, and they just haven't replaced them from a shooting standpoint. They should be better on defense. But Murray, I don't like the Trae Murray fit. I don't even think that Murray is going to be a guy who really drives like amazingly efficient offense. Like, maybe it's going to be more he can lead you to below averageness, which is better than they've been, but still, when Trae's off the floor. And I'm not sure how effective Trae can be without a true spread pick and roll threat. Like, it's going to be John Collins playing at the four a lot more. Their backup four is going to be Jalen Johnson, I guess, now, who's pretty unproven. You know, Okongwu, I don't see him taking a big step forward on offense this year. DeAndre Hunter you know, he doesn't really have the volume of some of the guys that they've had. He's an injury risk too.
Mm-hmm.
So
I am worried about Bogdanovich's knees.
Yeah.
Based on how last year ended, and if he can, he was really good the second half of last season, and
yeah.
So that could be a negative. They do have shooting potentially from AJ Griffin. So I'm interested to see how that works out. And then you got La Familia Holiday, man.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't really hit any shots last year either. So I don't think they're going to shoot the reason, obviously, Trey's brilliance, but they've been a very good shooting basketball team the last 2 years, and they're just not going to be that this year, I don't think. And I think they're going to be, and they don't even actually take as many threes as you would expect. I also worry that with Hunter and with Murray, there's going to be some McMillanization from the mid-range with these guys. So, I am selling the Hawks as a top five offense. I know they're number two last year. Trey is brilliant, obviously. Like, I'm trying not to get wrapped up in how bad he was in the playoffs. Like, he was an amazing regular season offensive player last year. He could also take a step back as a shooter, though. I think he upped his numbers last year by just making a lot more shots than he had in the past. He didn't get to the foul line as much. So is going to be able to consolidate those shooting gains, or could he drop back into that 34-35% range from three? I think it was 38 last year. So yeah, I'm a little further down on the Hawks. I mean, part of why this is so interesting, I mean, this is cleaning the glass numbers. I know you're just looking at NBA.com, but Utah is the number one offense. I don't think that's going to happen this year. Atlanta, I see them taking a step back. Memphis and Milwaukee were 4 and 5. Mm-hmm. Charlotte was 6. Minnesota was 7. And then Brooklyn and Denver were 8 and 9. I think they're maybe a little higher on NBA.com. But that's part of why this is so interesting to me. Hey, what about the Suns? Are the Suns going to be top five in offense this year?
I think they're going to be in the next five.
Yeah.
I think they'll still be good, even if, you know, whatever bad juju is going on over there. They don't have the one like super high level guy. I mean, Booker's close. They minus Crowder and how that situation resolves itself. I think maybe they're a little short on shooting. The depth situation in the backcourt is not great. So I think there's just too many kind of little things that you can pick at. I'm more comfortable with them in the 6 to 10 range. I'll bring up another team though, who I haven't heard you mention.
Yeah.
Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's another one where I feel a little bit more in the 6 to 10 range, but I could see them being top five, absolutely, if James Harden is really back.
Yeah, that's...
Maxey looks pretty good.
He's the whole question, obviously, but I also think they've done a lot to more better optimize what's around Harden and Embiid. But bringing in Tucker, House, Melton, I think the bench units are going to be better. Montrezl Harrell, I think like regular season offense, you know, when Embiid is out, either injured or second unit, you know, he can really jack up the offense there. I just think there's a lot to like on this team now, but it's a bet on Harden at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But also just having a more normal team with actual shooting, I think they definitely could get there. That's another health one. We just haven't seen that group over the full season, but yeah, that Harden and Embiid pick and roll could certainly be devastating. I would pick the Clippers though before them.
Really?
I know the Clippers really struggled offensively. Do you want to know what the LA Clippers, with a team that I would say probably was worse around him, do you want to know what the Clippers net rating was, or I'm sorry, offensive rating was with Kawhi Leonard on the floor in the 2021 season?
With Kawhi on the floor in the 21 season. I do not know that.
123.4.
Wow.
Now, that team was one of the greatest shooting teams ever. I think they shot more than 40% from three as a team, and you had a bunch of guys kind of having some career years there. But, and Kawhi, of course, he'll be on the same thing, 30 minutes a game, not playing back-to-backs, all that. I do think, you know, we didn't really get to see this team fully healthy, even with Paul George, very much, and they were a pretty bad offensive team last year, but we didn't even get to see him with Norm Powell, who's a very efficient finisher. Luke Kennard's like probably not even going to play. I think he led the NBA in three-point shooting last year, if they need that. They're going to get more of a transition element with John Wall, assuming he's runs into form. Reggie Jackson should be a lot more efficient now that he doesn't have to be the primary creator for most of the year. They're going to play a lot of five out. I think there's just too much talent here. I think they're going to be a top five offense. And it's just certainly in games Kawhi plays, you would have to say that.
Yeah, overall for them, I think I'm a little more comfortable with them in the second five. Kawhi's going to miss some time. Two, the Kawhi and George thing, like, it can sometimes degenerate into like a hailstorm of mid-range Jays, which is...
Yeah, it's not pretty, but it just works. I think your biggest argument to me is just Kawhi, PG, Marcus Moore, like, these guys are all just old enough that they don't have it as much anymore. That would be my biggest reason to believe that they won't be a really good offense.
Yeah, yeah. So... now, I do think they'll be much better than they were a year ago. If Kawhi missed the whole year. The other thing people forget, Paul George only played like 31 games. So
yeah.
The offense was like, you know, Reggie Jackson hand grenades at the end of the shot clock. So it's definitely going to be way better than it was last year. Not quite sure I'm going to take them in the top five. I think I might like Milwaukee a little better.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm just not sure Milwaukee is going to be able to shoot the ball as well. Like Drew Holiday shooting 40% on off the dribble threes. Don't know how much time Chris Middleton is going to miss. Like he seems to have actually slipped a little bit these last couple of years, even when he has been available. I think they have kind of slanted more towards being an offensive team. Like if they're going to play Bobby Portis a lot, he'll help the offense. Yeah, I just like some of these other teams better. Like I think Milwaukee's going to be good. I don't think they have... Because if I'm putting you in the top five, I want to kind of believe like you could be number one.
Okay.
And I'm not sure I see that from Milwaukee to really get to that type of level. But they've consistently been higher than you kind of would think. And Giannis keeps getting better. So I wouldn't say no on that. I have them kind of in the next year. I mean, this is why this is so difficult again. There's so many of these good offenses. Yeah. I think there's two other teams that I flirted with in my top tier. What about the Portland Trailblazers? They've been pretty good over the last few years when Dame has been in the lineup.
Yeah, that's been their history, that when Dame has been available, they've been pretty repeatable as a top five offense. I think there's a couple things here. One, are we going to get the all-NBA version of Damian Lillard, obviously, is the first question. But two, when you look at the rest of that team, like CJ McCollum was a much better partner in crime for him, I think, than Anthony Simons, because CJ was more capable of playing off the ball and doing some of those things while Lillard did his work on the ball. So interested to see how that fit is. And then the non-Lillard minutes with this second group, which I think is not very good. I just don't know if there's enough supporting cast there to support a top five offense. Like, I don't think the Blazers are going to get lit on defense quite the way they did the last 3 years. But I don't think it's going to be quite as elite at the offensive end either. I think they're going to pull a little more toward the middle on both sides than we've seen historically.
Yeah, you know, I think Simons, if he can embrace the role, his catch and shoot numbers from three have been pretty ridiculous. I was talking about that with Mike Richmond the other day on Dunked On Prime. But I think you're right that he's got to kind of find a way to be as effective playing next to Dame as he was without him last year. You know, Jeremy Grant does give them an element of attacking from the wing offensively that they haven't had. It's just my question is how efficient he can be potentially. If they play Gary Payton the second, how is that going to affect their offense? So I think they're worth discussing. I would not pencil them in for top five necessarily either. How about the Dallas Mavericks?
I just don't think there's enough there. I mean, they were 15th last year and Luka played most of the games. I understand you have Christian Wood there now as a front court option, which could probably juice the offense. But you also lost Brunson, so I think some of those non-Luka minutes might not be as positive. So I have a hard time seeing Dallas getting all the way up there.
Yeah, I think Luka has come in good shape this year. He was just so bad the first 2.5 months of last year. But
that's true.
Then after January 1st, he was awesome. Now, part of that surge was their defense. But I think Christian Wood, like, they haven't. And I think actually JaVale McGee is a guy who probably doesn't get enough credit for how good he is offensively as a guy who's going to have, like, a 20 usage and 65% true shooting. They just didn't have that the last couple of years after Powell tore his Achilles. And Luka is great finding these role guys. If they want to go with a five out with Kleba and Wood together, I like that pairing a lot. I think they're going to be right up there. And I, you know, guys like Reggie Bullock shot it terribly the first half of last year. Tim Hardaway Jr. will shoot it better this year. I think he was in the low 30s. So I think they're going to be better offensively. I just, my biggest concern is, as you mentioned, is the depth. I think with Luka off the floor, or there are going to be plenty of games where one of Luka or Dinwiddie aren't available. And they just did, like, if they just signed Kemba Walker, I would feel better about them at this point in time.
Wow.
Like, I mean, like Kemba Walker, I think, could be an okay backup point guard. So anyone else worth considering here? I mean, we talked about Phoenix. I think
Pelicans. Right up
there. Yeah. Yeah, the Pels. That's a... that's a really, really interesting one, too. And I'm not going to pencil them in there because I think the lack of spacing and they're yeah. just going to take a lot of mid-rangers. But, I mean, Zion, with a much worse supporting cast, was they were kind of touching that level with him on the floor 2 years ago.
Yeah, and, you know, will they just mash so many layups with Zion and Valanciunas that it just doesn't matter what their other numbers are from outside the paint?
Yeah, and Valanciunas is a pretty good offensive center. I mean, the lack of spacing could end up hurting them, and they might have to go with some more defensive guys off the bench, but that could be really interesting. So I've got three teams in my bottom tier. I'm interested to see whether you have the same three down there and whether you think anyone should join them. Here's my three.
Okay.
Oklahoma City Thunder.
Clearly.
Yeah. San Antonio Spurs.
Yep.
Orlando Magic.
Yep. I think those are all rock solid bets to end up in the bottom five.
Maybe Orlando wouldn't be. Maybe Paolo would just be that good. But I think they're still pretty light on shooting. And I mean, just, you know, they're going to play Jalen Suggs again. Like, their backcourt is just going to be inefficient. I think
so. There's too many bad guards in Orlando. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, rookie Banchero still learning the ropes or whatever. I think he'll have some games where he's really good. I just don't know how over the 82, like, how consistent that is. So pretty good bets for the bottom five, those three teams, definitely.
Yeah, and if OKC, if Shea and Holmgren had been healthy, maybe I would start thinking of them escaping this, but their offensive front court is atrocious. Shea, they're talking about him coming back pretty early on, but then, of course, he's going to be injured again for the last 2 months of the season. You just got to write something down on the report. What do you think it'll be this year, by the way? What's on the tanking Shea Gilgeous-Alexander bingo that we haven't hit yet?
Let's see.
Left hamstring tightness? Nothing to worry about. Yeah. It's just tightness, but he's out for two months.
Yeah. You need to get a less common muscle group, though.
Okay. Yeah, they're very hyper-specific. When you have a director of insight and foresight, you're able to really come up with these a little bit better.
Yeah. Like a right trapezius abrasion.
I don't think Shea Gilgeous-Alexander has any trapezius muscles. He might be too skinny for that.
Okay.
But I laud your creativity. But anyway, I mean, I think they just don't have, I mean, their lead creator is a guy who had a 48% true shooting last year in Giddy. And you know, I'm bullish on Jalen Williams, but that's, and then Shea coming back, like, we'll see whether, I don't know whether he's going to shoot the ball the way he did 2 years ago either. That was a pretty small sample. Is there anyone else you would throw into that bottom group?
You know, I was actually looking at this, trying to figure out who could join them at the bottom, and I'm actually having a little bit of a hard time. You know, that the Detroit was 28th last year. They could be bad again.
Yeah. Pre Boyan, I probably would have had them in this group. I've got them comfortably in the next tier in the 25 to 27 range.
Moving up in the world are the Pistons. Yeah. I actually think they could potentially, depending, you know, what kind of jump you get from Cade, I actually think they could maybe end up even half a notch above that. Utah was the number one offense last year. I actually think there are still good offensive players left on that team. Like I could see them being tragic on defense, but I think they'll actually be still be pretty decent on offense.
I have them in this group. I just figured they're going to find a way, and we're just going to see a lot. We're going to see some tanking. We're going to see a lot of Jared, but like they're going to pull a Portland from last year, I'm guessing, down the end.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one, because Portland was 27th in offense at the end of last year, but it was they did it all in the last 2 months. Indiana
quietly was actually an above average offense after they made the Halliburton trade last year.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy to think? I mean, now their defense was a.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about that. So I think they're going to be playing all these small guards. Like, they're not going to be able to stop anyone, but I think they'll just have enough shooting that they'll kind of figure it out. I don't think they're going to escape the 20s necessarily. I have Houston in that next group as well, with Detroit and Utah. I just think, like, they've got a lot of offensive guys. Like, you think, oh, they're running gun, high-powered.
Yeah.
But, I mean, still, their best offensive player is probably Jalen Green. He's the second-year guy. And he actually was more efficient than people remember last year. But they just don't have, like, the high-end talent or really the spot-up shooting to me to get to a point that's going to be out of it. Now, I think all these teams are young enough that they have guys who might take a step forward and then change things. But
But Houston is just kind of like this sort of crazy, reckless helter skelter. But they're not going to be with these bottom three teams that we talked about. But could they be 26th or 27th? I mean, they were 26th a year ago, and especially if they trade Eric Gordon, like, are they going to be that much better than that? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And now the nature of these two is that once you get into the mid 20s, you're kind of probably closer to, 20th or the high teens than you are to 30th. You usually get some outliers, where I think like OKC and Detroit for much of last year were like, 1.5, 2 points per 100 worse than basically anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Orlando was in that category too. So there is actually, I meant to mention these guys and I forgot it. I don't have them in my highest tier of offenses.
Okay.
But would you care to guess who, per cleaning the glass, was the number two offense in the NBA after January 1st last year?
After January 1st, the number two offense in the NBA. Was it Charlotte?
It was not Charlotte. They were sixth overall. They lost Miles Bridges, but they probably need to at least be slightly talked about. The Minnesota Timberwolves, John.
Yeah. I think that trade really tilted them away from shooting, and it's going to make it harder for them to have an elite offense. And what it does for them defensively, you'd have to say, is worth it, right? Like, sure. I'm not arguing that, but I don't know if they're going to hit quite as much of a ceiling offensively.
Yeah, I think their starters should be about the same. I'm a little worried about the bench offense, though, with Kyle Anderson now coming in. Malik Beasley quietly was shooting like 10 threes per 36 minutes, 11 threes per 36 minutes. They're going to miss him. Beverly was at least a quality spot-up option, even if he wasn't a volume guy. So they're kind of missing those guys. Jordan McLaughlin hasn't really been efficient in his career. Like, I think just the bench offense is going to kind of struggle, particularly when Towns is out of the game. So that I agree with you, but they certainly, it's not like Rudy Gobert is a worse offensive player than Jared Vanderbilt, right? And that starting lineup was actually very good.
Yeah, they lost so many three-pointers. I just worry about that.
All right, well, this is a lot of fun. Again, a reminder that you can sign up for Dunkdown Prime, which is where the only place to hear our next episode next week, where we'll get into our preseason disagreements. We'll talk about some of the best and worst defenses in the NBA. And obviously, we're going to have some more rookie extensions we'll surely have to hit on as well. But we look forward to seeing you over on Dunkdown Prime. There's a link on how to sign up in the show notes. And this is our one-time only sale that we're going to have up until John officially joins Dunkdown Prime next week. We hope to see y'all there. Till then.